Welcome to Cultivated Audio for May 2026. Today's guest, Ewan Campbell, found himself decades ago farming off the cliff slowly, as he puts it. Asking the question, what is soil, led him to revitalize his farm and into his life's work consulting throughout his country of New Zealand. Focusing on the unseen aspects of soil like electrical flow and cyanobacteria, as well as the physical components, has earned Ewan and his company EcoFarm Aotearoa a place of leadership within the regenerative community. Ewan also has a brilliant podcast series on YouTube with Stephen Brunton, who is also here today setting it all up, so they will air this broadcast as well. This is Robin. Grab your earbuds and or shovel. It's time to dig in. Ewan, you have such a wide and varied expertise, which is not unlike most of the farmers and ranchers and people involved with regenerative agriculture. So today I'd like to just start our conversation and see where we go and dive in a little bit about the electrical component to soil and minerals and that sort of thing. But to get started, would you tell us about your land and where you are located in New Zealand, rainfall, livestock that you've had, etc.?
We're about 2 hours south of Auckland, southeast of Auckland. We're not far from the east coast. We've got quite a moist rainfall. We get a couple of metres of rain a year, 6 feet, which is quite a bit. We're on volcanic ash soils, so it drains very quickly. It's rolling sort of country. If you have a look at any of the videos on the farm, you'll get to see a bit of the types of pastures that we run. And we've got Angus cattle, which we've got 100 cows that we breed from, and we fatten everything right through to the market. So we're going direct to customer. Yeah, it's been a real journey, I suppose, and I watch a lot of the stuff out of the States. White Oak Pastures has always been a really cool one. I love what he's doing there. And a huge amount of the work that I've done and learning arose out of Acres USA. Charles Walters think that he's a champion and probably one of the most dedicated researchers into what he brought together. And I went to Acres USA once, got this American contact too, because I trained with Brookside Laboratories out of Ohio in the late 90s, early 2000s. And so all our soil samples are still going through Brookside Laboratories, which is also taking in quite a lot of work from around the world, which we've just put a bit of a cap on at the moment because we're having trouble keeping up with it all. Specifically now that we're sort of dealing with a lot different components than what people see as natural, as normal fertilizer inputs. So, yeah, so that's, a little quick intro. I mean, I've been farming since I could put my gumboots on. I've got videos of me running across paddock chasing Angus cows when I was about 3 with curly blonde hair, and I just thought it was the duck's nuts. So I was like, woohoo, let's go.
Absolutely, so, yes.
Yeah, so farmer through and through. I've just enjoyed the science, enjoyed the observations and the ability to connect the dots up. And it's that part has been thoroughly enjoyable.
Yes.
Really getting to understand the sciences.
Well, I would love to dive into a little bit of that today. Just to let you know how long I've been at this, I interviewed Charles and Will Harris from White Oak. So I've been very fortunate to speak with these people and hear about from the ground up. And so, Ewan, when did the regenerative mindset come into view for you and into your operation?
I think the regenerative came to meet me. I was brought up on a peat farm, which is about 20 kilometres from where we are right now. And on the other 20 kilometres, the other way, is where I live now. So there's a mountain range, and so the rainfall between the two is half. So we were in a drier climate on peat farm, and it was very flat. My father broke that, and I mean, it was scrub when he went there. There wasn't anything. There was no drains, no fences, no nothing. So we turned that into a farm, turned it into a dairy farm. And it was very observable with the cows, milking cows, like we were milking 350 Friesian cows. It was really noticeable when you change things, like like minerals, selenium, copper, and just the reaction in the animals. And so there was things that I saw on the commercial side that just didn't make sense. You know, like we bought some super phosphate once and we dumped it in front of these trees and the trees all died, and that was the last time I ever bought any. I thought, well, if that does that to the soil. But the thing that probably was the difference, growing up on this raw peat soil, was we were always trying to make it better. And when people were not far away from us, like only 3 miles away on really good soils, they didn't understand what we were going through. They had really good soils and they just did the normal sort of stuff and they got away just fine. And we couldn't do that. And so the more we learned and the more we observed the changes that were happening on the farm, the more we go, oh, okay, we'll go this way, we'll go that way. And so superphosphate never worked for us. Nitrogen, well, we saw a boom and then no, the animals didn't do very well. So I suppose I was brought up with this, making decisions for yourself instead of letting industry make them for you.
Aren't you fortunate?
Well, I guess so. It has its pains at times, though. So when I left the dairy farm, because I wasn't overly happy there, we had a main road running through the middle of the farm, which wasn't there when Dad went there. It was just a dirt track. I just didn't enjoy milking cows, ploughing, having the main road. And so I went off track and went up into the hills and went back to the beef farming, which, yeah, was really my passion. And yeah, so we went from poor soils, but I jumped from the frying pan into the fire because a beautiful climate, lovely rolling country, but oh, the soils were shit. And that was where I really started digging because, you know, like it was such a beautiful place and you wanted to stay there, but like how are we going to do this? And I think, I don't know how much longer it was from there. That was early mid-90s, and I started to get involved with looking at Acres USA, and then I trained with Brookside in the late 90s. Just by mere accident, I got asked to go along. They had a training course just down the road from us. So at that stage, I was going, these guys got a bit more to offer than what New Zealand agriculture has. It was very linear. Oh, you just put this product on, whatever, and go, well, that's what I call a moron theory. It's like you just put more on and you become one of them.
Well, you're not wrong there. And as you said, they were, in a sense, at an advantage because the soils were so great. And it's such a rich country overall for soils before all of the pesticide use and all of the industrialization started taking over. But there are so many directions to come from in regenerative agriculture, and they all do meet in the soil and produce great results. And I know you've gone down the road into the electrical properties of soil and how this directly feeds into creating great healthy soils. So in saying that, where do you want to start from for this?
This is where it was really fascinating. I mean, I was read Secret Life of Plants, Tompkins and Bird, and I was looking at electromagnetic stuff with Davis and Rawls and looking at a lot of this material. Don't know if this got anything to do with me. And then I had a happy accident which really changed my life. I used a product from the steel mill in Glenbrook, which is just south of Auckland. And I bought it because it had high calcium, magnesium and a little bit of phosphorus. And it was cost effective. And I thought, well, I've got to give something a go. I mean, it's the old saying, well, my old saying is like, empty pockets sharpen the mind. And mine were pretty empty. So buying a farm in your 20s and wanting to make a crack of it, you don't want to be showing up by anyone. You get a bit sharp on the job. And it changed the farm. It just turned the farm upside down. We went from really poor rat's tail grasses and we had red clover and a whole lot of things changed really fast. And initially, I just thought, oh, well, the calcium and the magnesium's done their job. And then one incident happened on the farm which just blew my brains apart, really. We used to feed minerals in fish bins, which is just a square bin, and I'd put the minerals in it and leave them out in the paddock. And in our circumstances, in our rain deluge 2 metres, at times we can get 4 to 6 inches of rain in a night. And I went down the farm in the morning and the drum had 4 or 5 inches of water in it. But in the bottom of the drum was these lines that ran I found later, were exactly magnetic east-west. And the lines had drawn the kelp meal into an electrical current like a flow. So I had just like half a teaspoon of kelp meal left in the probably bottom of the drum. And it was looking like the mice had all come down and set up their Olympic swimming pool for their world championship in the fish bin. And I just like, what the? Ah! And that's when I sort of like, oh God. I talked to a couple of guys and it was actually a tractor mechanic. And he said, I reckon we need to get a voltmeter, Ewan. And he said, oh, I've got one. So we pulled out a voltmeter and then we're playing around with it. And then we got wised up that we better get a compass, because if you work on electromagnetics, you know, everything's at right-hand rules. It's the 90-degree process. So the magnetic field, so you go to the magnetic field and the compass, and then you start to see this right-hand rule come into place, and the electrical current was going east to west. And I'm going, what? And it wasn't a little bit later that I realised what had actually happened. We'd put this basic slag on, and because they were using iron sand off the west coast beaches, they had 50% silicon at that stage. And when it gets to a certain temperature, it would fuse with the magnesium and calcium to make calcium silicates, magnesium silicates. And they went onto the land, and it also had still quite a degree of magnetite, and that was talked about in Davis and Rawls about using this product around trees and having a great result. And it was also in Tompkins and Birds, The Secret Life of Soil. So I was like, this is interesting. So what we found was that the magnetite, when stimulated with electrical activity, these little things would actually join up. They're little wee magnets. They joined up and ran through the soil on this east-west axis. And I went on to start looking at solar panels. And I mean, it was a place that was only 200 metres from where I stand now, down at the camper van site just down the road. And I rolled in there and said, what's the go with these solar panels? And he said, oh, they just naturally phosphorate silicon and boron. And I'm going, ah! What's this going on? And he said, oh, here, have this booklet on how they work. And I'm like, oh, my God, what's this? And I inadvertently, like, wow, shit, that's interesting. I've just put this product on, had all this silica. And then there was another place not far from us, about 30 k's away, that it was called the Gemstone Factory, and he had fluorescent lights that you could put silicon products in. You could see whether they fluoresce. And if they fluoresce, they're actually putting off an electrical charge at the same time. So all my world just turned upside down. I was in the middle of a storm of working out, well, how's this working, that's working, all this sort of stuff. And, yeah, I came to a joint process that certain forms of silica with magnetite, having to have paramagnetic qualities in the soil, you could set up your own solar panel on the farm. And this is a natural process. It's something that I found that set itself up naturally around the country in specific places more and more. And I think probably looking at all the great civilizations around the world where they farm on river deltas, where these influences are there, I would say that they've all had a very strong electromagnetic field in their soils. So that's sort of how it came about. But, you know, once we worked out about making electricity in the soil and understanding, well, this is really cool, the more that we actually worked out how to ramp it up, the more it became like the amplifying effect amplified whatever you had, whether it was really good or really bad.
You talk about all of the good and all of the bad was magnified, and I'm wondering, how did you work with that? There are obviously a lot of things that help with the conductivity of a soil, and it's got to do with moisture content and salinity and texture, and molecular weights can also fall into part of that category as well. So maybe you could share a little bit with a specific example of what you did.
Okay, so one of the things that is the hardest for people to get their heads around is like the soil is a computer chip. It's silicon and it retains memory. And, you know, there's a lot of people say, you know, the land remembers the history. And I say, yep, you're dang right.
Yes.
And so I had a very good colleague, John Godwin, who's now passed away, but he was a homeopath, and he had oh God, he had about 3,000 different vials of different resonances of different frequencies of different products. So what we were doing, we'd take soil in from the farm, and we'd start sifting through these issues. And my God, the resonance in my soil still had DDT, 245T, 50D, and all these things. And I was going back to Brookside, and I want to do a chemical test. I want to know what's here, because I can see the chemical coming through in the plants. I had oak trees that looked like they'd been sprayed with a hormone spray. I'd just planted these oak trees 2 years before, and they just went twirly and twisted. Wow. So it was when John Godwin, he said, oh, well, you got these here. And then we had to start dealing radionically with these frequencies and trying to clean up the mess that had come about from that process. Because we were amplifying the electrical current, we were turning this frequency on, and we got the effect. And it was hideous. It was absolutely hideous. So, you know, that was just one example of the absolute mess from the process. The mess that comes from this process is like, it's all right to deal with it in a frequency basis, just targeting it, but the soil has to set up its defense mechanisms and its cleaning mechanisms, and that's the part where we really started working with a lot of the work that Paul Stamets had done with the fungal species and looking at the psilocybes and the cordyceps and that. And it was only accidental things that we did on the farm. We could see that I had cordyceps fungal species that we were using for human health, and when somebody put it on a pot plant and it grew really well and go, oh shit, I better put that in the farm. And so we were growing it in raw milk, and we'd put it in the water trough and the cows would eat it or drink it, and then they'd pop it around the farm. But one of the great things that happened straight away with my wiener calves, my Angus wiener calves, is when we put it in the water, they dried up. It had a huge beneficial effect on their ruminant and their gut. So we played around with more of these fungal species, but what I actually found out inadvertently when I cross-referenced, I don't know, half a dozen different fungal species, all of a sudden the memory in the soil of the toxicity gone, disappeared. And so we did a clean out job, and so I call the fungal species my control alt delete virus protection in a way.
Well, I was just going
to clean the soil.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I was recently reading something. This article was speaking about the vibration of different foods, and of course you can imagine processed foods, zero vibration or negative vibration, but mushrooms are so high. Fungus is so high. So I love hearing this. It's instant for me. It's just such direct, great feedback. That's brilliant. You've really been on an amazing, open, wide open journey with all of this, and you're really doing some great things.
Well, I think the thing that probably helped is that I didn't go to university and do agriculture. I didn't do this process. I did okay at school, and I liked the sciences and that sort of stuff, but just when you see things and observe nature, and Albrecht said it, you know, like, study nature, read books. If they don't agree, throw away the books. And, you know, like, I went down that track so often, and I read so much of his stuff. And you got to put context to the age that we live in, whether that Steiner was looking at vibrational aspect and all that. But when I run into that now and go, yeah, that's fine, but, like, if you've got chemistry in your soil that wasn't there when Steiner was about, we're getting mucked up. We can't rely on what he did alone, because we're moving forward in a time frame that we need to just keep working with what we've got. Yeah, it's been a pretty interesting ride.
That conductivity is what is light, right? My limited knowledge tells me that minerals are so key to conductivity, and your knowledge is wide and vast. You can move from one mineral, I'm sure, to the other and tell in relationship, and we don't have that much time for you today. And so maybe we can speak.
Well, I think the number one thing that we got to look at is the world is a biological system. And you'll hear me again and again, and I go, if we get the soil cleaned up, we need to set an environment to grow cyanobacteria from the ocean. That's how we got here on this planet.
Yes.
And if we grow those guys, we are safe, we are healthy, and we are functional. And everything revolves, my partner Paula, she says, Ewan's not a bee farmer, he's a cyanobacteria farmer. And everything we do is to actually propagate that process. And we watch it If you get it right, and that can be minerals, electricity, fungal species, climate, everything that goes with it.
Right. They're the greatest photosynthesizers, and they are what created our possibility, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And recently I interviewed this gentleman. His name is Predrag Slijepcevic. And you might be interested in his book, Biocivilizations. He spoke a lot in his book about these cyanobacteria. And it's interesting, isn't it? Because we can't see them, right? We can't
see
these bacteria. And yet, being the best photosynthesizers, it's very important what's going on here, right? So knowing about these cyanobacteria that we cannot see and their huge importance, just the fact that they're the greatest photosynthesizers, how do you see this knowledge really feeding how we can work with the soil?
Well, it's critical because what we see is the certain interactions with a lot of these trace elements, the cofactors, the seleniums, iodine, nickel, cobalt, molybdenum, copper, zinc, boron, all of these parts are incredibly important to their function. So they need a clean environment. But one thing that we have to recognize is that they love electricity, just thrive on it. And so as we get closer to the poles, we have a very short season, but we see the magnetic fields lift dramatically and the electrical activity in the soil rises. You know, when you go up through Canada, it's like they plant later and harvest earlier the further north you go. And that's a direct result for this electrical effect that you have in the soil. And so we've just learned how to enhance it. But if you can get these cyanobacteria to produce for you, they're the greatest nitrogen nutrient factory because they interrelate with electrical part of the soils, because we start looking at turning the mineral salt, turning minerals into salts like the phosphoruses, where we need to have five mineral salts, which then become a positive charge to be taken into a negative carbon plant. And we start to see the true relationship between the electricity and mineralogy.
What is your opinion then about mineralizing soils? I know you're a big proponent of having your soils tested in order to see, well, what have you got? What are you missing? What do you have but you're not utilizing, and all of that sort of thing. Do you think that sea minerals are good overall? I just feel like I love them because they seem to mimic our blood plasma. They seem to hold the same ratio of minerals.
The issue that we have with the sea minerals is like we bring them in, but we actually bring the sea minerals in to inoculate the cyanobacteria from the ocean. Like we actually bring them onto the land to actually like a seeding, like when people are making compost teas, I'm bringing it back on to reseed the land. And this is the relationship where we see we need lots of soluble silicon with them because they need that for their structural componentry.
Mm.
And so this is the part. Not so much that you need to keep adding the sea minerals, but more once you've got the biology struck in the soil, then you need to know what those minerals are that we need to keep feeding them. And you know, we've gone through this issue at home and with a lot of our clients. When you start growing soils, 10 ton of carbon a hectare increase in 12-month period, you can run yourself out of one of the minerals and it'll stop. And so you have to find out which one dropped off, which one I didn't have enough of. And it becomes a very fine-tuning operation.
Of course.
Yeah, I say fine-tuning, but, you know, I'm finicky about how I like to see the farm and how the livestock are and that. So hence, I'm always trying to make it a little bit better or
Well, that's what we do as farmers and ranchers, right? We observe and then we go, oh, well, this isn't quite happening here. You have a lot of experience, it seems, with recognizing, oh, my gosh, the soil has so much of this, and yet our plants are showing that they're not picking up any of it. Can you speak a little bit to that about unlocking?
Yeah, I think this is a huge bearing that when we do agricultural trials and that, and who we ask to do fundamental research, is that there's no linkage between the soil, the plant, and the animal. And I get to see it on all facets because I get to see in the soil and I get a soil test and go, well, it's looking all right. Well, let's have a look at the herbage test and go, oh, look at that mineral. Boron's dropped off. What's happened there? And then we look at the animal going, oh, look, they start chewing on rocks and pieces of wood when that happens. And then oh, that one, that mineral does this over here, and that mineral does that. And so you get to see a fascinating kaleidoscope of what's going on. And when I talk to other farmers, when they're on this journey with us, is that it's fascinating. They see that too, and they go, I saw that too. Is that what it means? Oh, cool. Now I know. Let's get on and do this process here. And so that's what I find. It is fascinating. We've looked in the wrong places for who we need to be doing our research. We need to look at systems and approaches instead of products. Yes, we use hundreds of different products, but we shouldn't be researching the product to sell it. We need to, where does that fit, or what's this to do with? And that's how we've had such great success, because we've come up with things that nobody uses except us.
Yes, and the proof is in the pudding, as they say. And can you share one example of what you've discovered on this path of minerals and their relationship to each other? I mean, you just mentioned, of course, the cattle, like, oh, they're trying to chew a rock and they're going after wood. Maybe you can use a specific example.
Well, I'll use like copper, for instance. There's a lot, large parts of New Zealand is very low in copper. And we see they get a browning down on the brisket and that to start with, which then extends the worse the problem comes. And then if you have an interrelationship with selenium, we have a very low selenium in this country. And so if they have no selenium and they're lacking copper, the problem gets worse because the selenium bumps the copper up into availability. And then what happens is when they poop S's or shit on the ground, S. I go, they're screaming at me, I've run out of selenium and I'm leaving an S behind to tell you I need some selenium. Now, that's, you can see that physically and watch that happen and go, okay, your selenium deficiency, and therefore you're elaborating a copper problem as well. I can go onto farms that have got huge amounts of copper in their soil down in Taranaki, and they're showing a copper deficiency in the animal and go, that's a selenium deficiency. You put 1 kilo of 2%, which is like 20 grams of selenium per hectare on, gone, fixed it.
It's so amazing. The amounts sometimes are so small, but if it's missing, the problems can become huge.
Yes, and so like, and just to go to give a relationship, like if you move on to cobalt per se, they go a slightly brownish all over if there's a lack of B12 in their diet. And you can't give them cobalt because it's the B12 they need. So that's another intricacy. And I've just been doing a lot of, well, I've observed a lot of stuff in the last 3 or 4 years of the intricacies of what happens. And that's one of them. Iodine, you'll see the animals move off to the corner of the paddock when it gets cold and rainy because they can't thermoregulate, you know, the thyroxin, not enough thyroxin. They can't do those functions correctly. So there's a whole range of these things that you see in the animals and go, ah. And I test in the herbage and I test in the soil, invariably it just shows up. There it is right there.
Yeah, thank you for your observations. Is it possible to share a couple of sentences on the relationship between electrical conductivity and magnetic properties and those effects?
Well, I don't think it's really, it's, you know, the conductivity, it's actually electrical charge, current. Conductivity, they measure, if I put a charge between here and here, there's electrical, it can move electricity.
Thank you.
So I'm talking about actual current.
Yes.
So in relation to that, when you have an electrical current, then it's Faraday's law. It has an electromagnetic field that runs in concentric circles. And what we're seeing now, and this is a deep and dark place, but what we're seeing now is that it has an effect on the photonic light in that magnetic field. And I believe, and I can't absolutely, but my observations and the research we're doing, is that I believe that the photonic light is the switching mechanisms in the DNA of how the plant's biology in the soil actually interrelate. And we see that if you get an interference in a clean system, you may very well get some information from the neighbor's place comes in, some poor, and you'll keep growing weeds that would normally have not grown in your own soil. It's very intricate. It's just like our computers, like what we've got going on with a Zoom call. There's a lot of wiring going on. There's a lot of information carrying on, and it needs to be clean. And there's something to do with this photonic light and the switching mechanism, but I understand it better, but I still haven't been able to put my teensy-weensy thing in the process. Mm-hmm. And we know how to clean it, and we know how to protect ourselves. So with that, we'll see more as we go along.
Right. Now, as you've been learning all of this, how has it come into play with your body, with your physical health? What do you do in your diet as a result?
Well, I mean, when I'm at home, we eat just about everything off the farm. And, yeah, no, it's had a huge bearing. I mean, I've been through understanding these things. I think Charles Walter's book with Richard Olry and Minerals for the Genetic Code was one of the great absolute stunners of all time. And mine just got beaten to a shred, and it sits in the corner with great delight with pages all twisted up and turned in. And, but, yeah, it's had a huge effect. It's funny, you know, like I have – there's some other books that I really stand up for. George Washington Carey and the Biomechanics System of Medicine, God, Man, the Word Made Flesh. We really get into the 12 tissue salts and the building blocks of cells. I'm born in the Sagittarius, which is the silicon, and my whole life's all been about silicon. It's like, oh, God. And I wear the consequences of it. And I've been through a process of, you know, like finding that hip problems are silicon-related, and I was having serious hip problems. And I've got out of that, and I can, yeah, quite happily bounce around the place and gallivant down the road and run around without a problem now. So it's been a huge learning curve into understanding how these parts fit together. And yeah, and I just, there's so much thanks and gratitude to the people that did a lot of the foundation work. I mean, I could never get to this point without Richard Olry's work, without Charles Walters. God, the man was amazing.
Yes.
Bringing these guys together, Davison Rawls and Elaine Ingham and every one of them, Albrecht, all had a great facet to bring to this game. And I turn up and I do this electrical thing, and every part of what they've done fits with this.
Such a great lineage, isn't it? And it's so wonderful that we get to share. Like, I get to speak with you in New Zealand and get to share all of this all around the world. It's so great. Ewan, I don't know if you are interested in speaking at all about the whole 60 Minutes piece. The only reason why I wanted to bring it up was because I wanted to share a story with you about Chris Bird that I'm not sure if you're aware of or not. Chris, of course, was the co-author of The Secret Life of Plants, and that book came out in 1973. But in, I think it was in 91, when I initially got together with him over the phone and doing interviews and everything, it was about a book he wrote, The Persecution and Trial of Gaston Naissons. Are you familiar of that work?
The name Gaston Naisson comes up, and I remember reading something about that, but carry on. I'm not fully aware of the process.
Yes, well, because Chris spoke French and became aware of the problem that Gaston Naissons was going through in Quebec. He was in a trial that during that time, they said it was the most important trial that was happening in Canada in the last 50 years, because he was a biologist and he developed what he called 714X, 7 being G and 14N for Gaston Naissons. And it was something that he taught people with cancer to inject into their lymph system and inject it into the lymph through the groin. And he was curing people of cancer left and right. And a woman who came to him, and she was literally on her deathbed. And so when she died, within 2 days of seeing Gaston, her family decided it was his fault. So they brought this huge suit against him, and there was a big trial. And when Chris Bird caught wind of this, he went up and he lived with Gaston, I think, the better part of a year during this trial, and covered the whole thing. The head of the big cancer hospital went on the stand and said, it's impossible to inject into your lymph system. It just cannot be done. And then he went on to say, well, I've looked at this 714X. There's no cancer-killing agent in this. And then when it was time to hear the other side, Gaston got on the stand and he said, well, of course there's no killing agent in it. If you look at the body and it has cancer, it's like a swamp. So you clean the swamp and the mosquitoes, the cancer cells, will go away. So beside that and him teaching the man down the street or the woman across the block how to inject into their own lymph system, and nobody was a doctor, people literally from around the world came and told them that they were now cancer-free because of the 714X. And so Gaston won the case, and it really shifted a lot of mentalities about medicine and about how everything works. And I know you've been really helping a lot of farmers in your area, and it's not the fertilizer, right? Can you talk a little bit about what you've given? I know a dairy farmer that you've worked with.
No, that's fine. I mean, we drew a lot of attention to ourselves about 20 years ago when I started this process. And inadvertently,
Of course.
People would come and look at our farm and they go, I want that. I want what you got. So, okay. So we started a business. And yeah, okay, we'll do that. So we started a business and it took off like a rocket. And I guess it just drew too much attention to us, and we drew the ire of the fertilizer companies, and I just had no idea how evil the whole thing was. But that's by the by. And if anybody wants to look at that, they can have a look at that on the 60 Minutes video on our website or on the YouTube channel. It really focused me in the sense I needed to know more about the law, but I also needed to know, well, there were certain things going on that I still didn't understand at that point. We were getting great results, but not results all of the time with all of the farmers, and so that was not good enough for me. And so probably once I withdrew a little bit for probably about 8 to 10 years and went through a whole lot of learning processes and ups and downs all over the place to actually understand the soils a hell of a lot better as they are now. But it was all about getting a focus for when you go on to a farm or somebody wants some help, you go, okay, we need this, 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 and this to find out what's going on. Then, okay, and then you have to do this, 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 and this, and be very prescriptive about what's happening. And now this is really where the YouTube channel and what we've done here and invested in the studio has been so paramount, is the education that's required to the farmers to actually understand and just to allow them to feel it's okay and express themselves. Is like when you talk to them about these things, I've seen that. And I ask someone else, doesn't matter. And I take it back to a very early incident on the peat farm where we had a particular part of the farm. As soon as we ploughed it up or we got this little bit of silt came up on the surface, the grass grew 30% more. And you'd get tests done with the Ministry of Agriculture and they just came back and said, well, I said, there's no difference in the test, no. And I go, look, we're growing 30 to 50% more grass. Oh, it's just one of those things. And I'm going, it's just one of those things. 30 to 50% more grass is just one of those things. I mean, you want to get genetically modified plants with 2% increase in productivity? Whoa, what's going on? So, and, you know, it's just that passion of trying to understand what's going on along the way. And I've been very, very lucky that, you know, some of these clients have been through these ups and downs with us, that they've, oop, something fell off, what did we run out of? And they've gone, well, what's going on? You're going, well, I'm going to have to go and find out. I don't know what's happened. But invariably, if we focus enough on our building blocks, so we've started with a foundation of mineralogy, the biology, and you just climb up the blocks and go, there, we're missing a block here. Put that block in and then off we go again. Mm-hmm. So we're dealing with hundreds of farmers in this country now, much to the dismay of the fertilizer companies and everything else, but we are producing a lot of really, really good food and having a lot of fun doing it. And yeah, really making a change. We're seeing it environmentally, the water quality leaving the farms. We're seeing it in the animal health, cost structures, profitability. Yeah, it's been a journey and a half. You know, but say it's interesting that we're sort of talking to you guys in America now, and as you can hear, that a huge amount of the study came from out of what was the work that was done there before I got going.
Well, that's certainly the beauty of what I've been finding, speaking to so many of you ranchers and farmers with a regenerative focus. There was a time in a lot of things where it's like, oh, I found this, I'm going to go do it in my corner. But everyone is really embracing their neighbor. They're embracing these workshops that happened and sharing just like you are today. Thank you so much for spending so much time with us and sharing so much that we can all benefit from.
Yeah, well, it was interesting just when I was down the South Island the other day, and this is where these agricultural colleges shut their blinkers off, but it was a mining engineer I was talking to, and he was saying about extracting these minerals and bits and pieces, and he goes, yeah, it's two-thirds science and a third art.
I think
you just got to know what's going on,
right? If you, yes, totally agree. If you're doing anything well, it's an art form for sure. Is there anything in closing? Is there something you're thinking right now? Oh, she needed to ask me this, or something you would like to say before we close?
No, crikey, we could be here for hours.
I know.
Days, couldn't we, Stephen? Yeah, and it's just an ongoing. I mean, I suppose more than anything, I do want to thank those people that did all that work earlier on and how that's all progressing. And I mean, it's great watching the Carbon Cowboys and likes of White Oak Pastures and Acres still trundling on down the track, you know, making a difference. I do believe now that we certainly have cracked a huge part of the puzzle that was not talked about in the electrical activity in the soil and how to increase it and understanding the connotations of the mineralogy, the biology and that goes with it. And I think that it will go down as my greatest claim to fame, is that some plonker farmer down in the back of Waihee actually managed to work out, hey, there's electricity running through the soil and man, look what this does and oh, look what's going, you know, we can make a change. And the thing about it is, which we've been doing a lot of videos and that, you know, for all this wah-wah, the, you know, the oil crisis and the running out of fertilizer and that, and I said, just build your own fertilizer plant in the soil.
Right,
if
yes.
If we can grow, it's like forget buying it off other people. Get right. The minerals that you require to grow the plant, or which is, you know, the cyanobacteria in your soil. You will grow all the nitrogen you need. You'll grow all the minerals that you need or convert them to the right forms.
Yes.
And understand the science as you go. You don't have to get in as far as I've been, but like you can actually get a feel for this thing. Oh, if it gets converted through this cyanobacteria and then it goes, oh, look, then its nutrients are ready for the plant growth and we're in ammonia into amines instead of nitrates and we're not going to get degradation in the soils. So, yeah, my big thing is like we need to really focus up. The electricity side of things is huge.
Yes.
As much as all the other guys have been playing around with the regenerative, when you throw this in, there's a whole lot of things that happen that have not been seen before. People are saying, oh, look, he's just using silica. I'll go and get silica. And they're going, there's two forms of silica you need to know about. The one, the hydrated one that turns to silicic acid. The other one that creates the electricity. You need to see the interrelationship and that sort of stuff. But you know, if you want to go down this track, it's like dig in, read up, get started. But, you know, like it's a lot easier now because we understand the issues, because we had that electricity driving. It just became the lights on, the lights off. Ah! What's happening? What's not happening? You know, and so we've been privileged in that way. It's been a journey, I must say.
Absolutely. But, well, thank you. It's been a very worthwhile one. And now, just for fun, Ewan, what's your favorite cut of meat being out there in the ranch?
Well,
with your Angus?
Well, we call it sirloin, I think.
All right.
But in saying that, you know, like you call it ground beef, but, you know, like I love mince, so I like making. And this just deny it, it just blows away this whole quality thing. So I've been down marketing our own beef and all this sort of stuff, winning one food awards, you know. Done a little bit of exporting and that sort of stuff. And yeah, you can make some seriously good quality meat. And, and there's not any part of a body of beef that I will not happily climb into with a great recipe.
Yeah. And we've got Stephen in the background helping us out with all of this today. Stephen, what's your favorite cut of meat?
Whatever my loving life partner serves me. If you're watching,
that makes
Bridget,
sense.
It's all good.
Yeah, and it comes from our farm.
Lovely. Perfect. Full circle. I like it. Well, wow, this was such a pleasure. I mean, New Zealand is certainly a place that I just have such great fantasies about having never been there, but it just feels so beautiful over there, and you all are helping make it more beautiful. So thank you so much.
Yeah, look, it's a beautiful place, all right, but we do need to nurture it and look after it.
Oh, yeah.
And we would be denying or hiding in the swamp if we did not realize that we environmentally and food quality and health-wise through the community hadn't got to a critical point, because it's as bad as anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And we are on the bounce back in a big way.
Yeah, we have the benefit of really great marketing from a worldwide perspective. Mm. But when you're living it down here, you can see the truth.
Yeah, you see the truth of the thing. You know, it is a beautiful place, and I get to travel over it all the time. Mm. Around it and love it. But I just love cleaning it up.
There's a great quote from Dr. William Albrecht that reads, "Read books and study nature, and when the two don't agree, throw out the books." Well, this is certainly the way of Ewan Campbell, whose observations have taken him and New Zealand very far. So many thanks to you, Ewan Campbell, and also to Stephen Brunton, who is Ewan's partner in crime, so to speak, as they do their YouTube podcast. So you all might want to check that out as well. It's loaded with all kinds of information. For anything we do here on Cultivated Audio, it's cultivatedaudio.com, and our podcasts are where you hope to find them. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for being here and for helping make here where we all want to be.